Welcome to Beyond the Headlines. I'm Ryan Harris. This week's show will be about as true to its name as it can get as we look back at what many call humanity's greatest achievement and what I think is probably the biggest news story ever. 40 years ago today, three men, Apollo 11 crew Michael Collins, Edwin Buzz Aldrin, and Neil Armstrong, were well on their way to the moon, with Armstrong and Aldrin destined to become the first men ever to set foot on any kind of planetary body besides Earth. The year was 1969. Richard Nixon just succeeded Lyndon Johnson as president. The U.S. was deeply embroiled in the Vietnam War, and secret bombings of Cambodia began as President Nixon began to withdraw the first troops from Vietnam. The underdog New York Jets, led by Joe Namath, defeated the Baltimore Colts in Super Bowl III. Sirhan Sirhan admits he shot Robert Kennedy, and 40 years ago yesterday, Ted Kennedy drove his car off a bridge on Chappaquiddick Island, an accident that killed one of his brother's former campaign aides, Mary Jo Kopechne. And two other Apollo missions, 9 and 10, provided the dress rehearsals needed for the first lunar landing. At the time, Apollo 10's full lunar module, or LEM, flight tests brought it closer to the moon than any man had been, 8.4 nautical miles. But in interviews, LEM pilot Gene Cernan has said that NASA purposely sent them without enough fuel in the LEM for a complete mission so that he and Commander Tom Stafford wouldn't try to defy orders and make themselves the first crew to land on the lunar surface. If they had, they wouldn't have had enough fuel to escape the moon's gravity and get home. But I'm getting ahead of myself, because Apollo wouldn't be possible without the two programs that came before it. In the late 1950s, rocket science wasn't exactly new. All you have to do is ask the British, who endured night after night of Hitler's V-2 rockets during World War II. But what became known as the space race began on October 4th, 1957, when the world first heard this. America was under a red shadow as the Soviet Union won the first leg of the space race with Sputnik, the first ever artificial satellite to orbit the Earth. That kicked the space race into high gear, with more than 100 military pilots testing and training to become America's first astronauts. On April 9, 1959, NASA introduced the world to the Mercury 7, Scott Carpenter, Gordo Cooper, John Glenn, Gus Grissom, Wally Schirra, Alan Shepard, and Deke Slayton. While they spent the next 2 years continuing their intense training, NASA rocket scientists continued testing the Redstone rockets they used for suborbital flights and the Atlas rockets used to put a spacecraft into Earth orbit. Then on January 31, 1961, Ham, a chimpanzee, became the first American in space. Actually, he was the first hominid in space. Ham carried out basic tasks in his space capsule that all but proved it was possible for a human to function in space, and his safe return set the stage for our first manned mission. We were poised to be first until April 12th of 1961. Soviet cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin became the first man in space. Not only had we been beaten by the Russians again, but they bested us at two of our goals by having Gagarin make a single orbit. But we weren't going to be outdone, and just 23 days later, it was our turn. Alan Shepard became the first American man in space by riding on top of a Mercury Redstone rocket. His Friendship 7 capsule landed safely about 15 minutes later. America was back in the race. 20 days later, President John F. Kennedy kicked it up a notch.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth.
Then Gus Grissom made a successful second flight in Liberty Bell 7. The next step was to orbit the Earth.
Godspeed, John Glenn.
John Glenn took care of that in July of 1961, followed by Scott Carpenter and Wally Schirra. Meanwhile, President Kennedy reiterated America's drive to get to the moon first in a speech at Rice University.
We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
And the Mercury program came to a close with Gordo Cooper spending more than a day making 22 orbits, the last American to orbit the Earth solo. We were now one step closer, but we still had some things to prove before we could head to the moon.
We wanted to actually find out how well could a man outside a spacecraft.
More on that next, Beyond the Headlines.
Control to Major Tom, you've really made the grade. And the papers want to know whose shirts you wear. Now it's time to leave the capsule if you dare. This is Major Tom to Ground Control. I'm stepping through the door.
Welcome back to Beyond the Headlines on Como News Radio. I'm Ryan Harris. We're looking back 40 years at humanity's journey to the moon by looking first at what NASA astronauts and teams had to do to make sure we could pull off such a colossal endeavor. Once the Mercury program proved we could put a man into orbit and bring him home safely, it was up to the Gemini program to prove several other necessary tasks could be completed in order to make going to the moon possible. Among those tasks, a flight long enough to show that humans could handle being in space for the length of a round trip to the moon. That fell to the crew of Gemini 4, Ed White and Jim McDivitt, who launched on June 3, 1965.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Liftoff.
As with earlier Gemini missions, this one attempted a rendezvous with one of its rocket stages to practice another maneuver key to getting home from the moon. But there was one other critical component to this mission, a spacewalk to prove humans could work outside their spacecraft. In order to do it in the daylight, less than 4 hours after launch, Ed White donned his spacesuit and was ready to look down at Hawaii with nothing between him and the ground but his helmet visor and a whole lot of space in between. This classic NASA film records those events.
Most of the world waited 100 miles below. The crew had completed final preparations. The cabin was depressurized and the hatch open. Coming up on Hawaii, McDivitt reported that he was satisfied and ready to begin EVA.
Sir, you ready to have him get up?
Roger, flight, we're go. He's got some nice elevated rates, which we expected, and he's really speeded it up, but he looks great. Let's go.
Okay.
Hawaii, Houston flight.
Houston flight, Hawaii, Cap Com, go.
Tell him we're ready to have him get out when he is.
Gemini 4, Hawaii, Cap Com. We just had word from Houston. We're ready to have you get out whenever you're ready.
Okay, we've got our go now, is that right?
Affirmative.
Okay, we're still doing a little work right here.
Roger, understand.
Get his status, Hawaii.
Gemini 4, Hawaii, Cap Com.
Okay, I'm separating from the spacecraft.
Okay, separate from the spacecraft at this time, Hawaii.
Okay, now see you out. I think I'm dragging a little bit, so I don't want to fire the gun yet. Okay, I'm out.
Okay, he's out. He's close to three.
Okay, I put a little roll in, took it right out. Okay, I rolled out, and I'm rolling to the right now. Under my own influence. There goes a... Looks like a thermal glove, Jim.
It is, yes.
Now I've come above the spacecraft, and I'm coming back down now. I'm under my own control. Okay, I'm coming over.
It looks beautiful.
I feel like $1 million. I'm coming back to you.
Then, after just over 15 minutes, came what Ed White called the saddest moment of his life.
24, Houston.
You know, Ed, the thing about the reference you were talking about looks like it's your right.
Hey, you don't even need that.
74, Houston, Capcom.
this is Jim. Any message for us?
The flight director says get back in.
Okay.
The Gemini program accomplished several other objectives. After one of the Agena target vehicles exploded after liftoff, it was decided the Gemini 6 mission meant to rendezvous with it would be scrubbed, and that Tom Stafford and Wally Schirra would become the crew of Gemini 6A, which would actually launch after Gemini 7 so that those two vehicles could meet in space. At 2 weeks, the Gemini 7 crew, Frank Borman and Jim Lovell, were also testing the effects of long-term spaceflight on the body. But in order to get both the Lunar Command Module and the Lunar Lander to the moon, we also had to practice putting two pieces of equipment together in space. Enter Gemini 8, manned by David Scott and a name you may recognize, Neil Armstrong.
Okay, Gemini 8, we have cam solid. You're looking good on the ground. Go ahead and dock.
Okay, go ahead with your memory compare.
Roger.
Let me know what you get out of that.
Flight, we are down.
That was it. Two vehicles docked for the first time in space.
Pretty simple, right? Well, it took 12 Gemini flights, including two unmanned, to get us ready for the next phase, Apollo flights to the moon. Next on Beyond the Headlines, tragedy strikes NASA. This is Como News Radio. Welcome back to Beyond the Headlines. I'm Ryan Harris. As dangerous as it was for astronauts to ride on what's essentially a flying bomb, NASA was fortunate in its early days. It wasn't until the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster that the space agency lost astronauts in flight. However, on February 28, 1966, astronauts Elliot C. and Charles Bassett were killed when their T-38 trainer crashed into a building at Lambert Field in St. Louis. Neither made it into space. On January 27, 1967, the astronauts assigned to Apollo 1 were doing what's called the plugs-out test to see if all the onboard equipment would function under its own power. The three crew members were strapped into their seats when their biggest concerns about the capsule became a nightmarish reality.
Apollo astronauts Roger Chaffee, Edward White, and Gus Grissom lose their lives in a tragic flash fire aboard their grounded space capsule. The tragedy occurred during a simulated countdown for the first flight of the Apollo program, whose goal is to put a man on the moon by 1970. Grissom and White were veterans of spaceflight, Chaffee a rookie. The entire three-man crew was engulfed by flames. A blue-ribbon panel of space experts is investigating, aided by impounded NASA films and tape recordings. Grissom was one of the seven original astronauts. White was America's first spacewalker. Chaffee, never in space, had long experience as a jet test pilot. He was proud and happy that his first flight was to initiate the Apollo program.
It's ironic that because the explosive hatch on Grissom's Liberty Bell 7 blew unexpectedly, causing it to sink into the Atlantic, NASA refused to put a similar hatch on the Apollo 1 module, a hatch that could have saved the lives of Grissom, White, and Chaffee. When we return to Beyond the Headlines, the Apollo 11 mission, as you remember it. You're listening to Como News Radio.
Earlier this year, ladies and gentlemen, I had one of the greatest thrills of my life. I watched three men fly to the moon. And imagine their surprise when they found out that I was there two nights ahead of them. And so, to all the gallant and brave men, the astronauts who made this mission impossible possible, I respectfully dedicate the following. Fly me to the moon.
Welcome back to Beyond the Headlines. I'm Ryan Harris. After years of planning and a directive from President Kennedy, it was time for Apollo 11 to be on its way to the moon. As a newsman, saddened by the death of Walter Cronkite, I thought it best to remember the events of 40 years ago with a look back at the way the man known as the most trusted man in America brought them to us on CBS News. The events of that week were some of the few so overwhelming that Walter Cronkite let down his solid, authoritative front and showed us that he was simply one of us. So let's start at the beginning of the journey, July 16th, 1969.
Good morning. Man is about to launch himself on a trip to the moon with the expectation of landing there. Man going to the moon here this morning from this Florida launch complex aboard that Saturn rocket. The rocket will go, will put the men into orbit 115 miles above the Earth for 1.5 orbits, and then the third stage will put them on their way toward the moon. Shortly after that point is reached, they will extract the lunar module from the third stage rocket, and then they'll be on their own on the way for their three-day voyage to the moon.
All indications coming in to the control center at this time indicate we are go on the Apollo mission, the flight to land of the first men on the moon. Guidance system goes on internal at 17 seconds, leading up to the ignition sequence at 8.9 seconds. We're approaching the 60-second mark on the Apollo 11 mission. T-minus 60 seconds and counting. Neil Armstrong just reported back. It's been a real smooth countdown. We passed the 50-second mark. Power transfer is complete. We're on internal power with the launch vehicle at this time. Astronauts report it feels good. T-minus 25 seconds. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running.
Past
the hour. Lift off on Apollo 11.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy, it looks good, won't it?
Somebody must be leaving town.
Building's shaking. We're getting that buffeting we've become used to. What a moment. Man on the way to the moon.
It was so much different than any other flight that it is hard, I think, this late date to imagine our emotions at the moment. It really was something that had to grip you. It was as if you could have stood at the dock and waved goodbye to Columbus. You knew darn good and well that this was the real history in the making.
Then on the afternoon of July 20th, it was time for the LEM to separate and make its way to the surface of the moon.
40 feet down, 2.5. Picking up some dust. 30 feet, 2.5 down. Make shadow. 4 forward. 4 forward. Drift into the right a little. 6.5.
30 seconds.
Forward. Okay. Contact light. Engine arm on.
We're home. Man on the moon.
Houston,
oh, jeez.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
Oh, boy.
Thank you.
Boy.
Okay, we're going to be busy for a minute. Houston, that may have seemed like a very long final phase. The auto-targeting was taking us right into a football field-sized crater. With a large number of big boulders and rocks for about a 1 or 2 crater diameters around it. And it required us running T-66 and flying manually over the rock field to find a reasonably good area.
Oh, boy.
Roger, we copy. It was beautiful from here. Tranquility, over.
So Neil Armstrong took control, threw it out of the automatic mode, put it on manual, and flew the spacecraft, looking out the window over that field.
Right, Tranquility. Be advised, there are lots of smiling faces in this room and all over the world, over.
You know, it really is getting to me right now, the justification. Two smiling faces.
At that point, it was time for Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong to rest and prepare for the tasks that lie ahead as they journeyed further into history. More on that journey coming up on Beyond the Headlines here on Como News Radio.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October sky. Thank you.
thank you for listening to Como News Radio. This is Beyond the Headlines, look back at Apollo 11 40 years later. I'm Ryan Harris. After what must have been an excruciating 2.5 hour rest period on the lunar surface, it was time for Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin to put on their space suits and venture outside the LEM. Here's more from the late Walter Cronkite, joined on CBS News by Mercury 7 astronaut Wally Schirra.
There's a foot going down.
There he is. There's a foot coming down the steps.
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now.
Okay, I just checked getting back up to that first step. That hasn't collapsed too far, but it's adequate to get back up.
Roger, we copy you.
Pretty good little jump. I'm at the foot of the ladder. The LEM footbeds are only depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches, although the surface appears to be very, very fine-grained as you get close to it. It's almost like a powder. Ground mass is very fine.
Wow. Armstrong is on the moon.
Now,
Neil Armstrong, 38-year-old American, standing on the surface of the moon on this July 20th, 1969.
That's one small step for man.
Neil Armstrong, with the words etched in the minds of so many after he became the first man to walk on the moon, but after a while, it was Buzz Aldrin's turn to come outside.
Seems to be no difficulty in moving around as we suspected. It's even perhaps easier than the simulations of 1/6G that we performed in various simulations on the ground.
Roger, Neil, we're reading you loud and clear. Let's see, get some pictures and the contingency sample.
I think that the flight plan actually called for him to take the contingency sample first and then the pictures. As I recall all my reading of the plan up to now, the contingency sample went first.
35.5 minutes of PLSS time expended now.
Take some of my first pictures here.
Mrs. Houston, do you copy about the contingency sample, over?
All right, you're going to get to that just as soon as I finish these picture series.
And
okay, you're going to get the contingency sample there.
Now, Aldrin's bugging him for it. The man is going to get tired of those kibitzers in a minute and get them up to the contingency sample just to quiet them. Nag, nag, nag.
Okay, the contingency sample is down, and it's a little difficult to dig through the... It's very interesting. It's a very soft surface, but here and there where I plug with the contingency sample collector, I run into very hard surface.
You know, he's got this little sort of bag on a sharp rim that he's dragging with along with an extension handle across the surface.
It has a stark beauty all its own. It's like much of the high desert of the United States. It's different, but it's very pretty out here.
Okay, I'm on the top step, and I can look down over the RCU and landing gear pad. It's a very simple matter to hop down from one step to the next.
There he comes.
Yes, I'm going to be very comfortable, and walking is also very comfortable. You've got three more steps and then a long one.
Watch that last step.
I guess he expected that strut to compact a little bit more, but as a result, it's a long step from
there. Okay, I'm going to leave that 1 foot up there and both hands down about the fourth rung up. There you go.
Welcome home.
And now we have two Americans on the moon.
Hey, you got it? That's a good step. Yep. What a 3-footer.
Three-foot first step, but 1/6 gravity, and look at that. It's like being on a...
Beautiful view. Isn't that something? Magnificent sight out here.
Magnificent desolation.
They're taking the cover off of the stainless steel plaque mounted on one leg there.
If you haven't read the plaque, we'll read the plaque that's on the front landing gear of this LEM. There's two hemispheres, one showing each of the two hemispheres of Earth. Underneath it says, "Dear men from the planet Earth, first set foot upon the moon, July 1969 AD. It came in peace for all mankind. It has the
the crew members' signatures and the signature of the President of the United States.
Oh, boy.
Buzz is erecting the solar wind experiment now.
Solar wind, of course, is not a wind as we know it on Earth here. That is something you feel against your cheek. It's a flow of protons from the sun. There it is. A U.S. flag on the surface of the moon.
That flag, the lens base, and several other items still sit on the moon. But the men had to come home. That and those who say we never went to the moon when we return to Beyond the Headlines. This is Beyond the Headlines on Como News Radio on this 40th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon mission, which had to end sometime. Here's more coverage of that mission from CBS News with the late Walter Cronkite.
I don't suppose we've been this nervous about a liftoff since back in the early days of Mercury, were we?
Arm, port stage, engine arm ascent, proceed. Beautiful.
26, 36
beats per second up.
5, 0,
pitch over.
Engines firing, they're on the way. Armstrong and Aldrin.
You're looking good.
After just short of 22 hours on the moon's surface, on the way back now to rendezvous with Mike Collins orbiting overhead.
The crew, of course, would jettison the ascent stage for the return trip home, splashing down to a hero's welcome on July 24th. Now, there are those who say the lunar missions were a hoax, that they were done on a Hollywood soundstage with props and wires. So we asked Buzz Aldrin what he thinks of the people who call him a liar.
I feel sorry for people that are gullible and get caught up by the self-serving nature of people trying to propel themselves into notoriety by outrageous claims of conspiracy and hoax. So I try not to pay too much attention to them.
As the space shuttle's near retirement, NASA is shooting for sending four-man crews back to the moon by 2020. It's not clear yet if they'll reach that goal, but there's no doubt the human spirit will continue to drive us to places like the moon, Mars, and beyond. I'm Ryan Harris. Charlie Harger will be here this time next week. Thanks for listening to Beyond the Headlines on Como News Radio.